This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Steph.
Hi, I just wanted to say a big thank you to Sheva and Ben from Over the Influence for all of the help and support that they've given me since I decided I needed a break from alcohol. I can say with absolute confidence that I wouldn't have made it this far without them, and I'm nearly at 10 months now, so maybe I will make the year after all against all the odds. So yeah, big thank you guys, appreciate all of the support and thanks for everything you've done. Cheers!
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Hello, hello, welcome. You know who we are Over the Influence. My name is Joey, I'm here with Charlie. Together we make Young and Sober. We take over this podcast once a month and we chat about being young and sober. Clues in the name really, isn't it? Yeah, woo indeed. All right, we've got a big one today, don't we, Charlie?
Yeah, it's an intense one, for sure.
But we'll keep it fun, you know, we'll put a little spin on things, as we always do. We're going to be talking about mental health and sobriety.
So,
how are they linked together and whatnot?
I should just say here as well that we're going to be obviously touching on some sensitive issues, talking about various mental health difficulties, and also there will be discussion of suicidal thoughts and self-harm. So if you know if this isn't the episode for you and you're going to find any of that triggering, feel free to just tune in next time. If it's not the one for you, that's fine.
Yeah, we totally understand, that's totally cool. We were talking about lots of stuff as well to do with mental health, so yeah, that's totally cool.
Yeah, just take care of yourself.
We won't take it personally. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we should just start by doing, like, a brief sort of, like, introduction. Like, you know, Charlie and I, like, our mental health both, we both struggled with it when we were drinking and whatnot. It was a lot harder to manage, a lot harder to stay on top of. And, you know, we did a little bit of research. Well, Charlie did quite a lot of research, actually. We've got references today. so, like, we did a lot of research. Like I said, Alcohol Change UK, like, alcohol has been described as the UK's favourite coping mechanism. That's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, when you really think about it, because, like, people drink to try and help manage, like, stress, anxiety, depression, and that sort of stuff. And it's like, does it really help? Like, you know what I mean? Is it just, like, literally, like, drowning it all? And it is kind of scary when you think about how serious this can be, because it sort of messes with your own understanding of mental health. Like, your perception of it is a bit skewed when you're just drinking all the time. And I think at this point, it's probably important to say, we are not licensed professionals. We are not trained therapists. You know, we make this very clear at our sober society in university. We don't have a clue what we're doing. No, it's not that we don't have a clue what we're doing.
We're just not licensed therapists or psychologists or anything like that. We're just trying to have open conversations and make these topics less taboo and better to deal, you know, easier to deal with and that kind of thing. But we
these are real issues. You know, we want to talk about these are real issues, we want to talk about them, we want to bring them more into the forefront of people's minds. And yeah, speaking of certain issues and whatnot, let's dive into the first little thing, Charlie.
Shall we go? So I've done some research basically, and just wanted to kind of talk about how alcohol relates to mental health in general. You know, I've got on the statistics as well as helpful websites like Drink Aware, Alcohol Change UK, Mind Charity, and a few others. So according to Mind UK, about one in four people in the UK experience a mental health problem each year.
That's quite a lot.
You know, there's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of people.
It seems significant.
If you're in a room with four people, one of you probably has a mental health problem. So, you know, it seems like a kind of downbeat topic, but actually when we don't talk about them, it kind of gives it more power, and when we do talk about it, we make it a bit less scary and we make people understand and we reduce stigma. And whether or not you have a sort of diagnosed mental health condition, alcohol can still affect your mental health dramatically, because everyone has mental health, right?
True. That's an important thing. Like, everyone has physical health, so everyone has mental health. If it's good or bad, that's another debate, but everyone has it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about a few different mental health conditions and how they kind of relate. So I thought we'd start with the most common mental health condition, depression. And people with depression often have a difficult relationship with alcohol and vice versa. So something that Alcohol Change UK noted on their website is that depression and heavy drinking have a sort of mutually reinforcing relationship. So either condition increases the other the person's chance of experiencing the other. So most simply described, a lot of people are probably familiar with what depression is, but most simply described, it's low mood, which lasts for a long time and impacts your daily life. And the severity can obviously differ between people, and there are many different types of depression. One of the kind of important points is that, like what I was saying before, like if you're depressed and you drink, it makes it worse, but then people also drink to cope with depression. So they're like mutually reinforcing each other, which can be a really difficult thing. Like I've definitely had sort of bouts of depression before when I've been, you know, drinking to make myself feel better and then feeling worse. And then it's like an ongoing cycle. So
literally it's a positive feedback loop that ironically leads to nothing but negativity. So that's
great. Yeah. No, and it's really hard. And I've got so many friends who have sort of struggled with depression and, you know, not necessarily had a stereotypical drinking problem. Sorry, I'm doing air quotes, but you can't see. not necessarily had a stereotypical drinking problem, but their depression has been, you know, affected by alcohol. Do you think you know many people who would say that, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, like, basically pretty much everyone you know drinks, right? And if one in four people have some sort of mental health condition, odds are a lot of people have had depression at some point or just feel very depressed. Because like you said, like, it is a kind of difficult thing to define. But what you said, what was it, like low mood for a long time? Something like that. That's bang on, to be honest with you. And it's definitely my experience too. And yeah, I definitely know a lot of people who would probably say the same thing, or words to that effect.
Yeah, definitely. Even talking to people at SoberSoc and stuff like that, I think a lot of them could relate. So then another a common one is sort of anxiety disorder. So obviously everyone feels anxious at times, but for those who have a sort of recognized or diagnosed disorder, you know, that's kind of like persistent, you know, persistently feeling anxious and to different kind of level of severity. At any given week in England, 6 in 100 people are recognized as having generalized anxiety disorder. So it doesn't sort of sound like a lot, but it is a lot. 6 in 100 people. You know, feeling anxious can mean we're left feeling uneasy, worried, fearful. And again, drinking kind of adds to this. So drink aware sort of made an important point here. For someone experiencing anxiety, a drink might help them feel more at ease, you know, especially if you're sort of socially anxious. You obviously you go into a social situation and you want to feel confident, you want to feel like it's easy and you're flowing and everything's going well. And yeah, like there is that alcohol does have that effect. It does make you relax at first. But this feeling is quite short-lived, and after a while it sort of makes it even more difficult to relax. And I think even if you don't have a sort of anxiety disorder and you just feel anxious from time to time, I definitely have used alcohol in this way to kind of try and just calm your nerves, sort of thing. Like before you're doing a talk or something, you'd have a drink, you know, get like I used to do shows, and before a show I'd have a few drinks, you know, just get in the mood. But then eventually you kind of build up this tolerance to alcohol and it stops making you less anxious, or even worse, sometimes you can't do the things that you want to without drinking. You can't do it without it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So kind of using alcohol in this way to cope, whether it's with, you know, being more confident in fun situations or coping with the more negative emotions like stress, worry, etc., is sometimes called self-medicating. But as we've said, even though alcohol can help you feel relaxed initially, these effects are very short-lived, and actually the negative consequences over a long period of time can be kind of harmful. And I don't know about you, Joe, but whenever I'd be hungover, I had some of the worst anxiety of my life when I was hungover.
You're just second-guessing everything, overthinking everything. What did I do last night? What did I say? And then it's like, oh, what am I going to do? Yeah, it is it's crippling.
It's crippling, yeah, no, definitely. And I think that will be familiar to so many people, even like I said before, people who don't have a sort of diagnosed condition, they'll still know what it feels like to wake up hungover and horribly anxious about whatever you might have done. And for that reason, I think, you know, kind of talking about this is so important, because it's relatable to a lot of people.
You've got to talk about difficult things, and you know, we're here to do that for you, right? We're the ones talking right now, so yeah.
And so I've done a little bit of research. So I'd say depression and anxiety are, you know, perhaps the best known and most talked about, but they are not the only conditions that are impacted by alcohol.
True.
Some mental health conditions are sort of less understood, less talked about, and more stigmatized. And I sort of wanted to talk about a few of those briefly here. Obviously, we don't have time to go very, very deeply into
the amount of
one.
Research you've done, Charlie. We do not have time at all. But go for it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got some notes. They're quite long and extensive. But
I like it.
So first, I sort of wanted to talk about schizophrenia. And I used to work actually as a support worker with a few service users who had schizophrenia, and some of them had real difficulties with alcohol as well. It's a mental disorder that involves difficulties relating to thoughts, emotions, and behavior. Obviously, that's a very, very simple definition, and it can also manifest really differently between people, like most of these mental health conditions can, but it can lead to faulty perceptions, withdrawal from reality, and delusional thinking. And then just a little bit of research I've done here. So alcohol can also lead to hallucinations and delusions. And for this reason, it kind of makes symptoms of schizophrenia worse. And actually, it can bring about schizophrenia as well. So another sort of less talked about mental health condition is a bipolar disorder. I'm sure you've probably heard of it, but it kind of, at its most simplest level again, means intense feelings of euphoria that are sort of followed by extreme sadness. Again, it's complex and there are many different types, but alcohol has been found to intensify bipolar disorder and increases the intensity and onset of a depressive episode. But it can also increase the severity of mania in the short term. And that's from Alcohol Rehab Guide. They've got a lot of very good information on there about alcohol and mental health. I definitely recommend looking there. And then we've got PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder. So this often happens to people when they've experienced some kind of trauma. It can be short-term, but it also can be lifelong. And it can lead to, you know, lots of... I think it's important to note here, a lot of these mental health conditions, as you probably know, can be happening alongside each other and are, you know, very complicated. So with PTSD and a lot of other of these, they can lead to depression or suicidal thoughts. You can have nightmares and flashbacks, that kind of thing. Again, alcohol has been found to worsen symptoms, and the relationship between those who have PTSD and the amount they drink is high. And this is especially true among veterans, which I thought was interesting. So also eating disorders are another difficult and sort of misunderstood type of mental health condition. And at its most simplest form, again, it usually means someone's relationship with food is difficult. And that's from Mind UK. So alcohol use disorders frequently co-occur with eating disorders because sometimes alcohol is used in the way they've been talking about to regulate emotions, or it might be part of impulsive behavior. Research again from Alcohol Rehab Guide has shown that eating disorder patients who abuse alcohol have worse symptoms and poorer chances of improving their outcomes. So obviously that's a real, real difficulty. And I think with most of these that we're talking about, alcohol gets in the way of getting better, you know, getting help and going through therapy and that kind of thing. And finally, I just want to touch on OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. It's characterized by two main parts: obsessions, so sort of unwelcome thoughts, images and worries, and compulsions, repetitive activities that you carry out to try and quell the sort of anxiety caused by that obsession. Again, that's from Mind UK. And like we've said with most of these, alcohol can increase the frequency and severity of the symptoms. As well, this doesn't really fit into a sort of condition per se, but we also wanted to touch on suicidal thoughts and thoughts of self-harm and self-harm and suicide. Obviously, this is a really difficult topic to talk about. And I think it is very stigmatized. Even if you're comfortable saying you have a certain mental health condition, a lot of the time it's hard to say I feel suicidal or I self-harm. And self-harm just means hurting yourself on purpose. And there are obviously many different reasons why someone might do that. And studies have sort of found that alcohol consumption is noted in many presentations of self-harm. And there's also a strong association between alcohol misuse and suicide thoughts and suicide attempts. This study found that alcohol consumption was detected in 44% in a sample of 307 suicide cases. And obviously this is a very, very personal thing, but I have experience with sort of suicidal thoughts and self-harm and stuff like that as well. And I can say with some certainty that those were always more dangerous and more prevalent when I'd been drinking or when or after I'd been drinking. So obviously we're talking about some really difficult stuff here, and it's even difficult to talk, like,
yeah,
it's
just a
difficult
bit, yeah.
to talk about because I, you know, I feel these things as I'm saying them, and it's a really hard issue, and I feel passionately about it, obviously. That's why we're here.
That is why we're here. It's important to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, people go through this stuff. People feel this stuff. And if you don't see anyone out in the world having conversations about it, it can make you feel kind of alone. Maybe you know, I'm struggling with this and I'm alone. But it's like, nah, yeah. you might be struggling with it, but so many people are too. And yeah, we're here to tell our stories and whatnot as well.
Exactly. So, you know, even if you don't have a diagnosed disorder, it doesn't mean that your mental health isn't impacted by alcohol. Like we said before, everyone has a mind, everyone has mental health, and alcohol itself is a depressant. Our brains sort of rely on this really delicate balance of chemicals, and alcohol disrupts this balance. So it sort of changes our thoughts and feelings, and often the way we act as well. And serious mental health conditions can be brought about from consistent alcohol use over long periods. So even if you didn't struggle with something beforehand, it could be brought about by the consumption of alcohol over time. And that is something I think that's really important to know. Obviously, it's a really difficult topic, but yeah, maybe we should move on to something. Well, it's not going to be lighter, really, is it?
Oh yeah, it's going to be so much lighter. No, it's true. Everything you said is true. It's relevant. It's important to talk about. Like, it goes back to what I said earlier. It's that positive feedback loop that ironically leads to nothing but negativity. And yeah, that's pretty much my experience with it as well. Like, so tell me about my story. Relate my mental health journey.
I'm interested.
My sobriety journey. You're interested to hear. All right, I'm sure others are too. Let's go for it. yeah. So, like, I don't know. I think most people, we started drinking right before it was legal to drink, like 18 years old and whatnot, as you do. But they really got bad for me when I turned 18, when it became legal, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
And yeah, going to uni, that's when it literally did it to me. The first time I went to university, it just all kicked off. It was just drinking, smoking, nonstop. That's just what life was like in uni. I was like, oh, that's just what people do, right?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, doesn't have to be that way. But anyway, yeah, I got into a bad relationship. That was kind of the start of it all. Like, I had so much stuff going on in my life. I wasn't ready to jump into a relationship. And the person I was with, she had so much stuff going on in her life. She wasn't ready for a relationship. But oddly enough, that kind of brought us together.
Yeah.
Like, in a way, like, we had that in common, you know? So we were, like, there for each other. But it got to a point where our relationship was only really good when we were consuming alcohol and smoking. And it was like, well, this isn't good. But It's strange to think about now when I look back on things, because it's like, you know, was it the relationship that led to drinking more? Was it drinking more that led to worsening the relationship? And that's probably both, you know. Like, it's a really difficult, like, thing to sort of point out, oh, this is where it all started. But when you look back on things, you realize it doesn't really matter exactly when it started. You can tell this is getting too bad and I need to start dealing with this. Like, I remember there were times where I just couldn't deal with the relationship and my own problems. So I prioritized myself. And then the person I was with, it was like, oh, you're prioritizing yourself too much. And it was like, I need to prioritize myself. And I just went to drinking and smoking in order for me to do that. It's like, I need this. You know, this is me time, right?
Yeah.
I described it as me time, like just drinking and smoking. That was me time. Not a very healthy me time, but that's what it took. You know what I mean? I had just so much going on in my life that I was just sort of putting on the back seat. I was just leaving it on the shelf, going, I'll deal with that later. Let me just have a drink. I'll deal with that later. I just need to smoke. Like, I'll you know what I mean? I just constantly putting it off for the next day, And it just get worse and worse and worse. Like, the pile just got bigger and bigger and bigger. I know this is going to be a really weird analogy, I guess. But basically, like, imagine you've got laundry to do, right? Like, loads of clothes that needs putting in the washing. And you're just like, oh, I can't be bothered. I'll just do it tomorrow. And then the pile of clothes just starts, like, piling up. Yeah. And eventually, it's too big to fit in the washing machine. Yeah. And if you're trying to fit it all in the washing machine's going to break. It's going to break down. And I sort of realized, like, I can't put all of my stuff in the washing machine at once. Everything going on in my life, I can't clean it all at once. You know, I had to do it in little bits. I had to separate things, my colors, my darks, you know. I had to figure out, like, what are my priorities, right? Like, what are the biggest things in my life that I need to sort out? Can I even continue doing my degree? Is this even something that I want to do? I don't know what I want to do. I just want to feel good.
Sorry, what was your first degree again, Joey?
It was psychology. Yeah, I did, like, a year and a bit. And, yeah, like, in the second year of, like, doing psychology, I told myself, all right, I've got through first year. I can get through this year. And then about 2 months in, I was like, yeah, I can't get through this year. Like, you know what I mean? It was just like an instant realization. I do not want to be here. That was like the biggest feeling that I have. Like, I do not want to be here. But I just couldn't work up the strength and the courage to leave. It was like, you know, you felt like a failure, letting people down. Like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, what am I doing with my life? Is this the best that I can do? Like, I've talked about that in previous episodes. Is this the best that I can do?
How are you sort of feeling around those times?
I suppose it's just one of those things that, like, now I look back on it now and, like, how I dealt with it back then isn't how I deal with it now. Mm-hmm. So how I dealt with it back then was just drinking more, smoking more. Mm-hmm. And then obviously I was just sat in bed all day. I was like hungover the next day, and it was like, well, now I'm not even going to do any more stuff. Like, I'm not going to do any work. I'm going to fail this year of uni. I'm not working on my relationship. That's going to go to shit. And then it's like, is this the best that I can do? Well, obviously not if I'm just high and drunk all the time. That was literally me. Going through university, just trying to drink and smoke my way through life. Drink and smoke and repeat. It's like this feeling of not being enough just made me so depressed. Like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't have anything to offer. One question that I like to ask myself now is, of what use can I be to the world?
Mm-hmm.
And back when I was just drinking and smoking all the time, like, nothing. Like, I wasn't of any use to anyone, even myself. That's how I felt, at least. And so I lacked confidence. My weight was falling badly because I just wasn't eating very well. And I got to the point where when I ate something, I just throw it up again. I didn't want to, you know, didn't really have any control over it. It just sort of happened. And I was like, well, this is new. And it was a really, really hard thing to go through. But I just sort of realized, like, I've got to stop doing what I'm doing. And I need to stop drinking a bit. And then I stopped drinking, and that whole throwing up after I ate thing, that went away. But of course, that's not when I stopped drinking completely. Because, you know, we all go through this phase, like, I'm never drinking again. And then it lasts for about a month, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
But like I said, for years after this, I just kept on drinking, kept on smoking, kept on doing what I was doing. And it got to the point where I couldn't really tell the difference between having bad mental health and just having a bad relationship with drugs. Mm-hmm. And it was just a spiral that went down and down. I had, like, an episode one day in work, and I just wasn't feeling good in the job that I was in. And amazingly, the amazing people that I work with got me a counselor to talk to for like 6 weeks. And I was just so nice with them, unbelievably nice. And it helped a lot. And one of the things that my counselor was asking me about was, you know, do you drink? Do you smoke? So all that stuff going on. Like, and I was like, yeah, a bit. Yeah. Maybe like one.
Sometimes, yeah.
Occasionally. And she was like, well, okay, like, you know, maybe it's that's like impacting your health, and you're like, maybe, you know, we should talk about that. And I was like, nah.
It's not that. I'm not. Honestly.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with that. That's just stuff that I do for fun.
I just got issues. That's my fun time. You know?
And it was like, looking back at it now, it's so obvious that that's like one of the main things that I needed to do. And it was just discipline more than anything else. Like, saying to myself, all right, this is my life. These are my problems. What am I going to do about it?
Yeah.
No one's going to come to save me. Mm. I need to be the hero in my own movie.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's something I've realized as well. Like, you don't have to do it on your own. And these things might not be your fault. You know, you might have had all sorts of experiences that led you to be in the situation that you're in. But you're the only one who can change that, unfortunately or fortunately.
It's
true. So when I realized that, it was a really powerful moment for me. And what that meant for me was, you know, reaching out and getting help and stuff. So it's not like you have to do it on your own, but I had to be the one to accept that help. If I just kept pushing it away, then nothing was ever going to change.
Yeah. The first step is acceptance. Like, I need help. I know that I need help. And for me, that was seeking out a therapist. And I spoke to a couple, and I asked for recommendations. Really funny. I was like, what therapist would you recommend to another therapist? And she gave me like a card of like, loads of therapists. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. But I eventually found like a great one. And I still talk to her now. Like, honestly, like, I don't know what I'd do without having that one person to just go to. And therapy can seem like a really big thing as well sometimes. I see it more of like having someone that you can talk to who's actually going to give you really good advice. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's the things that you need to hear, not the things you want to hear. You know, a lot of the times, like, the the things that we need aren't the things that we want. You have to do the things you don't want to get the things you do want. Mm. And like I said, it for me, like the biggest thing in my life is discipline. Mm. Just do the things you hate, but do them like you love them. Like I said, when I was first going sober, I didn't intend on doing it for the rest of my life. I was like, I just need to get my act together for like 1 month. I just need 1 month of stability. Everything that was in my mind, the gears started turning. Everything started going. It's like, stability, that is what I need. I feel so unstable. Things can be really good and then really bad and really good and really bad. And I just need stability for once. And so I thought, maybe, just maybe, my relationship with drugs is affecting that a little bit. Maybe a little bit. Yeah, maybe. And so I just held myself accountable and said, I'm just going to do it for a little while and just see how I go. And instantly, the biggest change that I noticed specifically with my mental health was stability. Like, it's okay to have bad days sometimes. It's okay to go through things that are really difficult. Sometimes that's the only way to go forward. You know, you got to go through, you got to take the difficult path in life. But right now, because of the fact that I'm sober, I can say to myself, it's okay, it's just a wobble. Previously, when I was drinking and smoking and whatnot, if I had a wobble, I'd freak out. I'd be like, oh my God, everything's shaking around me. Like, I'm not going to be able to stand up straight. And you're like, sometimes you just can't even get out of bed. Like, you literally can't stand up straight. You just can't get out of bed. But now, thanks to sobriety, I'm able to stay stable. And it's literally changed every single aspect of my life, just being stable, telling myself, it's okay, you can do this. If you can go through everything that you've been through, you can go through this, whatever this is. And I like to think, like, everything bad that's ever happened to me, every struggle that has ever affected my life, everything that I've been through, I keep it all behind me. I keep it there because that is my way of telling myself there's no going back.
Mm.
Like, if I go back, that's what I'm going back to. I don't want to go back to that. And the main focus was just getting sober, just starting small. Like, what can I change? Mm. You know, like, it used to be like, what can I change? Nothing. Oh, I feel useless. I feel depressed. But now it's like, what can I change? Nothing. Okay, well, we can get through this.
Yeah.
Just talk to myself. We can get through this.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do is I'll just give yourself a little pep talk in the mirror.
Oh, I love it.
You got this.
We're just going to take a very short break from this episode of Over the Influence. It's another cracker. Absolutely brilliant. Loving it, as per usual. One aspect of our community that our members love, and we get a lot of feedback on this, is the forums. Here you can post your alcohol-free successes. You can share the smallest of wins, the biggest of wins, and we don't mind if you share the rubbish bits too. The forums are incredibly supportive. Everybody is welcome to post in there, to celebrate, commiserate, to get you going again, to cheer you on your way, and as well to celebrate those all important milestones. It doesn't matter if it is 7 days or 7 months or even 7 years. We have got members within the community at all stages of their alcohol-free journey. It's all shared in the forums. It's all kept private. It is so positive. And it's a great deal of fun as well. If you want more information about what we do, just take a look at overtheinfluence.co.uk or feel free to contact us direct. We reply to all our emails, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Let's get back to the episode.
Maybe it's a good time for me to tell people my story because you talk about stability and very recently, I've found out that I have BPD, which is borderline personality disorder. But what's more recently been called is emotionally unstable personality disorder.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's got a good ring to it.
So, yeah, stability is something that I would love to have, but don't necessarily have even now that I am sober. But I do have a damn sight more of it now. But just to go back a few steps. So as a kid, you know, I was just really anxious. Like, I guess I had a lot of different traumas and different bad things that happened. My dad left and I was always scared. I was always worried. I was always felt like I'd done something wrong or, you know, I don't know, I felt like ashamed and just bad generally and scared, I guess. And then obviously start going through puberty and the shame just skyrockets because you're thinking all these dirty thoughts as a teenager. And then I realized that I could drink alcohol and I could feel confident and not so anxious and so bad and so up and down. But obviously I took it a bit too far. I probably started heavily drinking at 14, but I definitely drank before that as well. So it was quite young, but it wasn't abnormal either, I wouldn't say. Like, a lot of my friends did as well. And I didn't really know what was, quote unquote, wrong with me, because one day I could feel fine and I'd be so happy and confident and everything would be all good. And then the next day I could literally feel like suicidally depressed. And I didn't understand what that meant. Like, I didn't, because I would be fine one day and then like spiraling the next, I felt like I was making it all up, like I was doing it to myself. And that was a really hard thing for me to go through because I felt like I was faking it almost. And this is something that I've heard a lot of people with BPD saying, you sort of feel like you're faking it because you're so up and down. But I never had even heard of BPD. I had no idea what that was. I was given a lot of different diagnoses, like depression, anxiety, bipolar, cyclothymia, which is sort of a milder bipolar. None seemed to fit right, really. Some doctors even told me that I had a low mood when I would talk about my really severe self-harming behaviors, and I was like,
low mood, yeah, that's definitely accurate. Yeah, it's like, so, you know, dark and feeling like kind of depressed, like really, really bad, like almost suicidal. You just got low mood.
Low
like,
mood. Oh, nice one. Typing it into the laptop. Low mood. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Sorry, go on.
But then obviously it was all mixed up because I was drinking a lot, so I didn't know what was my mental health issues and past trauma and what was kind of my drinking problems. Or like, I don't know if I would have thought I had the drinking problem, but I couldn't clearly see what was going wrong because my drinking would kind of get in the way. And I was obviously like, it's clear now because I know how sensitive I am, and I've been sober for over a year now, and I think I'm still really sensitive to like big crowds and loud noises and bright lights and stuff like that, and also really sensitive to people's emotions and their reactions to me. So if someone's like pulls a slight face and I think they're angry at me, then I can spiral into like feeling suicidal, and it's really impractical and annoying most of my life.
Impractical. I've never heard it be described as impractical, but that's,
yeah,
cool.
Well, because you know, I can be out one day and something small could happen, like, and I can just spiral and it's like, oh my god, like I can't go into uni or work or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's really difficult. But now looking back, because I know how sensitive I am, it's clear to me that I was using alcohol to self-medicate. Like, I was using it to sort of dull down the outside because I was so sensitive to it. And it did work for a small time, but then afterwards I would feel anxious. My habits worse, and it all stacked up. It was like the positive feedback loop we were talking about. It was all muddled up together and I just couldn't make sense of anything. So this is obviously a difficult for me to say, and I did touch on it before, but I've attempted suicide 4 times, and on 3 of those occasions I've been drinking a lot. And even when that happened, I'm not absolutely not blaming these people, but it's more like just a cultural attitude towards alcohol. Even when that happened, like, people told me, oh, you should maybe have a break from drinking, but no one ever told me to quit drinking, you know. I never considered that an option. Like, I genuinely didn't think that was an option for me, or for any young woman who's, you know, just living her life drinking. So I guess it took a long time for me to realize that drinking wasn't helping. And then when I first got sober, I was literally up and down like a yo-yo, like never before, which a lot of people report in early sobriety, to be fair. A lot of people are up and down in early sobriety, but it was to a new level. And I guess what giving up alcohol did for me was it sort of illuminated my mental health problems for what they were in a more clear way, because it wasn't all muddled up together. It was like I could see clearly what was happening. Like, I could see that I was having, you know, one severe breakdown every other day and it was triggered by something small or whatever it might have been. And it was probably very recently, actually, my friend was talking about working in a secure unit for people with severe BPD, and she was telling me about some of the behaviors of people with BPD, you know, carry out and some of the symptoms that they have. And I was like, whoa, that's like what I do, but like on a sort of less extreme level. And these are just, this is how it manifests for me, but it manifests for everyone differently. I'm very, very up and down emotionally. I can sort of spiral into wanting to self-harm or, you know, hurt myself in that way. And then when I'm down like that, I also have very self-sabotaging, like I want to act in a self-sabotaging way. Like I'll do really extreme stuff, like threaten to throw myself down the stairs or say that I'm going to go into town and drink, even though that I know that I won't. And it's kind of like, it's like a cry for help in a way, but it's also like pathological. Like I can't stop it from happening. It just happens. And that's really hard for me just to live with that. And I also have, you know, real fear of abandonment. So if I think someone's mad at me or I think someone's going to leave me, that can really sort of trigger me into having one of these episodes. And when I was drinking, they were so much more extreme because I would like often hold it in when I was sober, and it would come out when I was drunk, even more dramatically. Like, because you're so much less scared to do stuff, you know, self-destructive behavior when you're drunk anyway. So yeah, it was quite scary. And then when my friend was talking about that, I did a bit of research into BPD, and I honestly felt like finally I'd figured something out about myself. Like pieces of the puzzle that didn't make sense started to match up. A lot of people with BPD say that they've had trauma when they were a child, but not everyone does. But also a lot of people with BPD use alcohol and drugs partly to cope and partly as a kind of impulsive, self-destructive kind of behavior. And that was definitely what it was like for me. Like I knew it was bad somewhere deep down, but I wanted to keep doing it. I wanted to keep hurting myself.
Yeah, that's a really crazy thing to like hear out loud. Like, you know that it's bad, but you want it at the same time. Like,
yeah,
can you like explain a tiny bit more about what that is? Because it sounds like contradictory, but no, it's a real thing.
No, I know. It sounds really strange.
And it's difficult to explain, so I'll probably just put you on the spot here.
I would say for me, this isn't the same as everyone, and a lot of people with BPD get sort of labelled as manipulative or quote-unquote attention-seeking. But how it is for me, it's like I know it's bad and I know I shouldn't do it, but I still want to for some strange reason. And I suspect afterwards, I suspect that it was like some kind of it was in order to get attention of someone, but not in a, like, not in your stereotypical attention seeking kind of way. It was like I was so desperate and in so much pain that I would do anything to get someone to notice me, to get someone to help me. But it's only really after that I can sort of reflect and say that's probably what was going through my mind. At the time, I'm just like, no, this is what I'm going to do because I can't handle life anymore. And that is another one of the feelings, is just like when you're really down like that, feeling like I just can't handle life anymore. And that's why I say I'll do all these things, like I'll go drink or I'll throw myself in front of a car or whatever. Sorry, I say that with such
you said that so like calmly, you know, just
blase. No, but that honestly, like, that is what life is like for me. And so yeah, when I got sober, I sort of started to notice how things were, which was difficult, really hard. And it was only when I sort of had about 6 months of sobriety under my belt that I was like, okay, I feel well enough now to go and see a doctor and reach out and get help. It was only like when I was a bit better that I was able to go and get help. And then I tried loads of different medications. Some of them really fucked me up. But eventually found some that really helped me. I was kind of like really skeptical about medication, and I had been off medication for years because of that. But at this point, I was willing to try anything because I was having one of these spiraling breakdowns, like what, once every other day, you know, and it just wasn't practical. So then I started taking medication, and it really helped me. Obviously, it's not the same for everyone. And there's no like clear medication for people with BPD either, but a lot of the time they're prescribed antidepressants, which kind of help with the really extreme down emotions. And they can also be prescribed like mood stabler kind of medication as well. I'm on both. Both have really helped me, but everyone's different. Like, you know, everyone will react differently to things. So then after that, it kind of calmed down. Like, it was much more steady. I say when I first started the antidepressants, my libido was like rock bottom. But after a few months, it was back to normal. So
oh, well, that's
anyone's
good.
Worrying about that, then, you know. But yeah, and then things were a bit more stable, and I was still having, and I still have breakdowns like that, but they probably happen once a week or once every other week now rather than every other day. And it is all thanks to being sober. That's the thing. Like, I couldn't have done any of this or realized any of this or got to this point without getting sober. Like, it just wouldn't have worked. And now I'm like having therapy, like a few different kinds of therapy that I kind of pestered the doctors about because I can't like afford private therapy. And I've managed eventually to get through to someone. And I guess that's another difficult thing as well, is because you really have to try. Like, you really have to push and push and push if you want, you know, help, like free help. And that does make things hard. And I really do sympathize with people who are kind of in that position. But yeah, I think going sober helped me so much. And now things are so far from perfect. But like what we were saying before, Joey, like, things are manageable. Like, I know what my main triggers are. I know how to soothe myself. I know how to react in certain situations. And it's just so much more predictable because it doesn't have the added part of drinking in there, I think.
Yeah, no, I really like that. Like, it's manageable. You can figure yourself out. Like, you know what your triggers are. Like you just said then, like, you know what your biggest triggers are now. But like, when you're just drowning yourself in alcohol and just not really paying attention to your health, just sort of drinking your way through life or whatever, you're not really paying close attention to what it is that starts this feeling. Like, however you feel, you know what I mean? If you feel anxious, depressed, whatever it is, what triggered it? You know, what happened? You're not just going to feel that way. Like, what happened? Where's this coming from?
Yeah.
And being sober really helps you to just sort of take a step back and be like, okay, let's work my way through this.
Yeah. Know? Even if there's not like a really obvious trigger, like, I can definitely have panic attacks that are just brought on by seemingly nothing. But usually if I take a second to step back, I'm like, oh, it's because I thought that, and then I thought that, and then I thought that kind of thing. Mm. And then it just makes it seem a little bit less scary, I guess, or less intense.
You're putting pieces together that you didn't even know could go together. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it isn't perfect. I don't think anyone ever is perfect in terms of their health, but it really is a lot more manageable, and that is the key thing.
Yeah. So now I just got a few little quotes from members of the community who have written in and just wanted to share a bit about their experience with alcohol relating to their mental health. So the first one says, as a kid, I had to watch my mum use alcohol to self-medicate. It was awful, mostly because her coping mechanism obviously wasn't working. I suffer with PTSD, and anxiety or bouts of depression can build up and make escapism feel like it's the only solution. But I always end up waking with the same feelings I was trying to escape.
Well, that was beautifully put, that at the end. I always end up waking with the same feelings I was trying to escape. Whoever this person is should be a poet.
Yeah.
That's actually really, really, really accurate as well. Like, it's an escape. Like, drinking is an escape, but it's never going to help you escape completely because you're dependent on it. Mm-hmm. You're dependent on drinking to escape something. Like I said, like, with my story, with the relationship that I was in, all the bad struggles in my relationship, I felt like every time I was drinking, smoking, I just wanted to escape it. But the only true way to escape that relationship was to figure out how to end it.
And another interesting point to point out here is that if you aren't in a great place mentally, like, I'm sure many of us have been in this situation, but you still want to go out and socialize and have friends. You know, if I was in a bad mood or a bit tired or feeling sad, I would be like, well, I'll just get drunk and then, you know, it'll be fine. Then I'll be able to talk to people and socialize and have fun or whatever. But it would always end up the same, whether that was later that night or the next day or the next week. Those feelings would always come back. And now if I want to go out in the evening and hang out with my friends, then I'm really up for it and I have a lovely time. If it gets to the evening and I'm feeling really tired and I just want to put my pajamas on, like, that's okay too.
It's okay to put your pajamas on, man. But no, it's a good point you mentioned. Like, I used to live, so like, I had quite a big friendship group in university. Like, it was so big that it required like more than one flat for like six people. And so if I wanted to like see my mates in like another flat, I'd obviously have to leave my flat and go to theirs. But sometimes just leaving my own flat was like such a struggle.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to go out and face the world. And I just knew that if I said to myself, well, if I just start drinking and smoking, then yeah, it's fine. I can just go and see them and whatnot. And I just realized, like, I haven't actually seen my friends sober in so long.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, I want to figure myself out. I want to be able to work through things, not just escape things. And obviously, if you are just drinking your way through life, you know, it seems to help. It's like, yeah, this makes me feel good. This is working. But in reality, no, it does have quite a negative
effect. It's making everything worse. Yeah, I've got another quote here. Someone saying, I definitely drank to self-medicate. I struggled with OCD and anxiety. I didn't realise I was doing it at the time. But when I stopped drinking, my mental health improved dramatically. I began taking a course of CBT to help me understand and cope with the things without turning to booze. So I think this is another great point. And I also didn't realize that I was self-medicating until after. Like, it's like with reflection that I can be like, oh, obviously I was drinking to dull these things down or to help myself cope with these emotions. But it's kind of really hard to see that in the moment unless you're kind of in the sober space and talking about this kind of thing a lot. It kind of often comes about after you realize after, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a lot. Like when we were telling our stories, a lot of the time before we said something, we realized, so I only really realized this afterwards. And like, I know after all of this happened, I realize what it is now. And it's like, that's a really helpful thing though. Like being sober, like when you look back at your life throughout the times where you went sober, you start to realize things that you would never have realized, that like you put pieces together that you didn't even realize go together. And then you just start thinking to yourself, oh my God, that makes more sense now.
Yeah, hindsight.
Yourself out more. Hindsight's 2020.
And then a final quote from someone here is just quite short, but it says, I often feel suicidal from post-alcohol blues. And I think this is more common than people think. Like when I would be drunk and hungover, like, hungover, my suicidal thoughts would be, you know, really high. And I've definitely spoken to many friends who have like never experienced suicidal thoughts, but when they've been drinking the night before, they experience these thoughts, and it's just it's intense.
It really is true. Like, you don't think about it a lot while it's happening. You think like you're just on a come down, you're just hanging over, you're just this, you're just that. But in reality, like, they really do affect your health and your thoughts, and you start to think things that you wouldn't normally think. Like, you feel as though you're not yourself, and it can, post-alcohol blues. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, no, I agree. So for our final section, maybe we'll be a bit more positive and happy.
Yeah, we'll try and be a bit more light with this, a bit more positive indeed.
But yeah, I guess the main sort of takeaways from this is that everyone's different, everyone has different struggles, and different things are going to help different people. Like, there's no one size fits all for mental health stuff, especially when alcohol's involved. But I just wanted to talk about some of the things that me and Joey sort of do to keep our mental health in check, or ways that we cope when we're feeling overwhelmed or whatever other emotions we might be feeling. Obviously, everyone's different, so you've got to figure out what your things are. But
yeah, we're just giving our examples. Yeah. Like we said earlier, we are not licensed therapists. But I think like it's important to remember that even if your mental health is good generally, you can still have a wobble from time to time. Things can still go wrong, you can still have bad days. But the main thing for me is I can tell myself that now. Like before, when I was drinking and smoking, the slightest thing would happen and I would make it the biggest deal. I'd let all my laundry pile up and then I couldn't fit it in the washing machine. I didn't know what to do. But now I can manage things. I mean, even if you're in great physical shape and you're a really fit and healthy person, you still get a cold from time to time. You still get the sniffles. And it's the same with your mental health. Even if you're really good at taking care of your mental health, you're still going to have bad days. You're still going to have a wobble. But that's okay. Like, the question to ask yourself is it manageable? What helps you manage your mental health?
Yeah, I think for me, managing it is like what we were saying before, like sort of learning the things that trigger me, trying to avoid them, or learning how to cope when things are really bad. For me, it's getting into bed and having someone rub me and say that, you know, you're safe, everything's okay. I can also do that for myself sometimes, but it's not easy. And I guess when I'm feeling really overwhelmed like that, I just, instead of turning to something to cope, I guess like alcohol, drugs, I just give myself a break. Like, I'm just like, if you want to just go get into bed right now, that's fine. Like, you know, if you want to have a snack right now instead of thinking this, that's fine. Because at the end of the day, obviously it's great to sort of feel everything. Sometimes you are going to want to escape and watch a film or whatever. Like, I totally get that, and I don't think it's necessarily a really bad thing. It's just what you use to escape in those moments makes a difference, you know.
Yeah, that's totally true.
Yeah, I think it's better. Well, even though I'm very up and down and like a bit, you know, I don't know what word you'd use.
Up and down is accurate.
Yeah, up and down. I think I do feel my feelings most of the time. Like, I don't have a problem with crying in front of people, which some people find very awkward. So like, and I'm not doing it on purpose. Like, I can't pretend to be one way when I'm actually another. Like, I just think I'm very upfront with how I feel because I don't have a choice. But you know, like at sober circle and stuff, I'll cry. And I have no problem with doing that in front of people. And if I'm really happy, I have no problem showing that either. And I think that's a great thing. But sometimes it can be so overwhelming that I just want to escape. And in those moments, I'll just give myself a break, get into bed, watch a movie, watch an animated movie.
Mate, I think it's really important to have a healthy escape. Like, I love watching movies. I collect DVDs, I collect Blu-rays, and I absolutely love just sticking something on. And like, because it's just like a Blu-ray player, you're not like streaming it on Netflix, you're not tempted to like watch something else, go on your phone while it's on. You can just sink into the movie and just escape. And it's a nice healthy escape just to have like an hour and a half, 2 hours of just relaxing and just giving yourself that break.
Yeah.
It's a really important thing to have.
I also, you know, classic thing that people say to help your mental health, but I am of course into like meditating and yoga, and I love swimming and stuff. And sometimes when I'm overstimulated by sort of stimuli, I guess, I'll go get into bed, and instead of putting on a film, I'll just like put something over my eyes and like have some like really like calming music in the background, and just try and sort of undo the overwhelming feeling of being overstimulated. I try and do like meditating and yoga or some kind of exercise every day, because I just think after it, I feel good, I feel calm, I feel like I have clarity. But obviously, again, everyone's different.
Yeah, no, I absolutely do agree with that though. Like, I think a lot of the time, whenever I'm feeling like a bit of, like I'm having a bit of a wobble, I'll say to myself, how am I feeling right now? Am I feeling anxious, depressed, nervous, sad? What exactly is this emotion? Is it anger? Is it frustration? And I just try and identify what it is. And then I just look around the room. I'll pick five things. Just name five things that you can see. And then tell myself, you're in a safe place. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay to be sad. What are you going to do about it? It's okay to be angry. What are you going to do about it? And then I sort of pick an activity that relates to how I feel. Like, if I'm feeling angry or frustrated or just irritated, I'll just go for a run. Just run it off, or just lift some weights. Lift some weights. You know, there's always something you can do. Just identify how you feel.
Especially, with frustration and things like that, it can be really just cathartic to get it out. Like, just your body let some energy go, you know, jump around a bit.
Absolutely.
And you'll be feeling much better.
And I think for me as well, I spoke about this before. For me, it's a lot about discipline. You know, I could do a whole podcast just on discipline. But basically, like, I like to think of discipline as choosing between what you want now and what you want most. That's a quote from somebody else. I don't know who it is. I'm not going to take credit for it. But it's true. Like, sometimes you just have to say, like, I need to do the things I hate, but do them like I love them.
Yeah.
And that makes you feel so much better. Because a lot of the time in life, like I said, you have to do the things you don't want to get the things you do want. And if you were to add them all up, there will be more time spent in life doing things you don't want than doing things you do want. Sometimes that's what you have to do. And that's a really difficult thing for people to realize and for people to go through, especially when it comes to mental health. So how do you get better at something like that? Well, you practice it. And
exactly.
How do you practice discipline? How do you practice doing things you hate but doing them like you love them? You know what I'm going to say, Charlie. You know what I'm going to say.
What?
Cold showers, man.
Oh, cold showers.
Here we go.
We love cold showers.
We love cold showers. They have changed my entire life. Just first thing in the morning, I know that if I can get in that freezing cold shower and then get out again afterwards, I can make it through the rest of the day. Bring on the day. It doesn't matter what the rest of the day has in store for me. If I can step into a cold ass shower and then get out again, I know that I can do whatever it is I need to do.
I think what I love about cold showers is that it takes you out. Like, you can't be worrying when you're having a cold shower. Like, all that's going through your head when you're having a cold shower is like, fuck, and it's like your brain goes into survival mode. And because of that, all thoughts, well, not all thoughts, but like all worries are kind of gone. Like,
Yeah.
Your body's surviving. It's like, I've got to survive this freezing
You're
cold
never
shower.
More present than in a cold shower.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, agree more. Yeah, so I guess these are just a few little things that we do to kind of try and keep our mental health in check and have fun with it as well. Like, I feel like it seems so serious, and it is, and it's really important, but you know, you can get a little fun and a little silly and try not to take yourself too seriously. I think that's the main thing. You know, while I'm having a sort of episode, I sort of try not to take myself too seriously, and it is funny in a way, in a kind of weird way. But one thing I was going to say as well is that you have a 100% success rate at getting through your worst days. Like, you've literally never failed. Like, you have survived 100% of your bad days. And I think it's important just to tell yourself that, remind yourself of that. Like, your worst ever moments, you're still here. Like, you've got through it, you know?
You're still here. You made it. You made it. And you're listening to this right now. Well done, you.
You're listening to this. What a great choice of way to spend your time. But yeah, you don't, also, like, you don't have to be young to be listening to this. Like, everyone has mental health, whatever age you are. But if you know someone that's young and sober and, you know, would like to listen to something like this, please pass it on to them. We want to talk about the joys of sobriety and how sobriety can help with all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what we're here to do. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a difficult one. We've tried to have fun with it. I've had fun with it. I hope you've had fun listening. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Hello, this is Ben, and you've come to the end of another fabulous episode of Over the Influence. If you enjoyed it and your podcast app lets you leave a rating or a review, please can you do that for us? A 5-star rating would be fabulous, a written review even better. Basically, by leaving a review or giving us a rating, you're helping other people to find us, because it's something to do with algorithms and podcast apps, and I'm not quite sure how it works, but essentially, you actively engaging with us and leaving your written review or leaving us your 5 stars lets other people know that this podcast is great and that they should listen to it. As you know, we're all about shouting about the joys of sobriety from the rooftops here at Over the Influence, and we want to encourage as many people as we can to try giving up alcohol to see how it makes them feel. So again, please leave us a rating and a review. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.